sitting.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, before we went to break, we were talking about restaurants. And just so happened, this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today. And it says State Watch. This is The Hill. Restaurants face new challenges to survive after key legislation stalls. Restaurants that struggle to survive the pandemic are now worried they could close their doors for good after the Senate effectively killed legislation that would have provided more funding. The Senate in May failed to advance the Small Business COVID Relief Act, which included $40 billion to refill the restaurant's revitalization fund set up by a separate relief bill in 2021. Restaurants argued the new money was necessary because nearly 177,000 restaurants that applied for funding were left out of the $28 billion in grants sent to just 105,000 restaurants. Now those restaurants have little hope of getting additional funding from Washington, where Republicans in the House and Senate are skeptical of additional relief money. They say much of what has already been authorized by Washington has yet to be spent, and they are not in favor of providing more taxpayer money at a time of rising inflation. So, Sandy, so the restaurants grew accustomed to receiving these ARPA funds. And because, like you were talking about during COVID, people weren't coming to restaurants. Restaurants had overhead. They couldn't just stop. And so they were receiving some assistance from the federal government. Federal government is cutting that off. And restaurants are saying, we can't survive without it. What's supposed to happen?
Well, you know, restaurants in Europe, the business model for lots of things is going to change. And I think the waitstaff industry, the people who work in service in restaurants, the kitchen staff, the wait staff in Europe, those people are all professionals. Now, in this country, the kitchen staff aren't based on tips, or at least they mostly aren't. I think in some restaurants they even share tips, but tipping is the way that the business model in the United States, minimum wage, or even in some states you can pay less than minimum wage to employees that rely on tips, and then tipping is the way they make money. So you don't make any money at all if people don't come in, and a business model in the United States has long been that wait staff is not a lifelong career. It's not something you can rely on the money for. It's something you do while you're going to school or while you're starting out or while you're trying to be an actor in Hollywood or whatever the deal is. In Europe, wait staff is professional. People don't expect to get tipped. They earn salaries. They work for long periods of time. They're the face of the restaurant. They have a lot to do with the reputation of the restaurant and the style of service. And you can notice that when you travel. And that's the model that's transitioning to in the United States, because wait staff, restaurants are currently having trouble, not because there aren't people ready to come to the restaurant. It's because there's nobody ready to work in the restaurant. Right. And when you go to the restaurant, you get poor service. And they have to apologize to you, or there aren't enough workers, and there's a sign on the door saying we have to close Sunday and Monday for want of staff. And so the business model is changing, and it's much like the business model for automobile dealerships. It's like the business model for real estate commercial space. It's all part of this evolution in the marketplace.
So why aren't restaurants then pushing for immigration? Because that's going to be where their access to employees.
Well, I'm not sure they aren't pushing for immigration. I mean, I suspect that those industries that most rely on the kind of population that's willing to commit themselves to working full time in those kinds of jobs are wanting more immigration. It's the tribalism is being driven by portions of the population that I don't clearly identify.
So Sandy, I guess I we're going to lose a swath of restaurants. I mean,
well, restaurants have a, you know, the half-life of a restaurant isn't very long. It's a little bit like bars. You know, there are some bars that last for a very long time, and there are some restaurants that last for a very long time, and those are the ones we think of, but they're relatively rare in the industry, and they always have been. And particularly for the last 40 or 50 years.
You know, Sandy, I want to go to now the unprecedented, and this is an article in Global Pulse, 3 reasons for unprecedented world hunger. You started talking about famine a while back, and here in our country, it's hard for us to even fathom, you know, famine.
Yeah.
Even people who struggle economically, there's always enough food in America, right? We throw food away. We throw away enough food to feed the world on a daily basis, restaurants and all those other things. The global famine is real, the threat of global famine, and it's going to be here in the twinkling of an eye.
Well, I mean, the shortage of food, when you look at, for instance, Egypt and some of the countries that rely on the wheat that comes out of Ukraine and Russia, and the impending shortage of wheat will have dire consequences, because in the diets of those people, wheat is a very important source of the nutrition that they rely on to live. And we can remember back in the days when Ethiopia
had pictures of
children and adults dying of famine in Ethiopia. I mean, we as Americans don't realize the fragile edge that many people live on with respect to just getting subsistence and getting food. And can that happen in America?
No, I know it's not going to happen in America, but the fact that it's going to happen even more so globally, we had turned a corner on that.
Well, and we should understand that when that happens, the people who have the alternative of leaving where they live or starving to death will definitely opt for the option of leaving where they live. So the amount of emigration that will occur, you know, we've already seen it. When there's warfare in a country, many people have to pack their bags, the 2 bags they have with the only possessions they have. They get to carry those bags, and they leave, and they go to Europe, or they come to the United States. And so some of the social disruption that we've experienced in the world has been the very result of immigration from the emigrants who are leaving troubled places. The Syrian emigration had caused a material impact in Europe in terms of social upset. It also affected the politics there and drove some of those countries to the right as the population began to take on the political issue of resisting immigration and changing immigration laws. And doesn't that sound familiar?
So we as the great United States, during those times of famine, were the ones who were able to come to the rescue of the world and feed the world. I don't know, and based on what's happening now in Ukraine, we're not going to be able to do that.
Well, we'd like to say we did that, but we weren't able to save all those Ethiopians, and there's been Somalians, and there's been a bunch of countries that have experienced terrible famine that even the United Nations and the rest of the world trying to assist still allowed hundreds of thousands of people to die of hunger.
Yeah, but that hasn't been for a while. Looks like that's going to be on the docket soon, based on, and who would have thought that what is happening in Ukraine would be at the root of all of that? I mean, we can watch.
Well, that's just because we forget, because World War II caused, you know, the people talk about and are in wonder of, and it's horrible to think that 26 million Russians died during World War II. Many of those people died of typhus and of hunger and of things that were caused by warfare, but they didn't die of bullets. Okay, and there are many more fatalities that come out of major wars that relate to the collateral effects of the war than from actual shrapnel and bullets.
You know, it's you see it's coming. the United Nations itself can't do much to prevent it. It doesn't have the structure or the infrastructure to deal with it. You know, our nation is
well, some of the problems for solving the problem of, for instance, hunger in Africa is simply the transportation of food. I mean, the problem right now for getting the wheat from Ukraine to Africa involves ships.
Yeah.
And the ability to move the ships. Yes.
Yeah.
And part of the whole the parts crisis we have in the supply chain in the United States relates to ships and the ability to load them and unload them at docks. And if we're going to be shipping food to starving places, we're going to have to load and unload them at docks, much the way we have to load and unload parts in our supply chain, which we aren't able to do. So a lot of the infrastructure problems we're currently experiencing will get in the way of our ability to solve problems like world hunger.
You know, Sandy, all of these things, you always say they're complex. That's because they really are.
Yeah.
None of it is easy.
I use the analogy, I can't remember if it's Wednesday or whenever, but about the broken watch.
Yeah.
That's really, when you think about complexity, I remember when I was a kid, my mother one day, to keep me busy, gave me a watch from my father had that was broken and said, here, take it apart and put it back together again. I took it apart real quickly.
Yeah.
It never got put back together.
Yeah, well, you know, number one, you know, you got to have the right tools.
Well, and it's complicated.
Yeah.
That was the first time I realized complexity. I got that watch apart, or I opened it up, and I looked at it, and I thought, ooh, this looks complicated.
You got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams in the studio. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And what would the weekend be without a call from CJ? CJ, what's going on, man?
Need a weekend to recover.
you guys are great.
What's going on, man?
Well, you know, as I listen to you guys talk about the success of this so-called administration.
Oh, wait a minute, CJ. Just to get you on topic, we haven't talked about that for one nanominute this morning. I'm not saying that there isn't success to talk about, but we haven't talked about it at all.
I know you've had trouble finding it.
No, sure.
You know... you talk about, you know, the Build Back Better plan or the rescue plan, paying people to stay home. And even the Secretary of Treasury said they made a mistake on inflation. You know, but I hear everybody talks about what a great job he's doing. And this famine that we've left around the world, we left famine behind in Afghanistan. Now we watched Biden misread Putin and the deterrence of sanctions never were meant to deter. Now we're going to have famine all over the world because of this president's weakness and allowing Putin to disrupt Ukraine's exports of grain. And so, you know, and as I listen, that most of that money from the rescue plan hasn't been spent, but now we're going to buy votes by allowing students to excuse $10,000 in debt, which will cause more inflation. And so I don't know where people find. I can understand why you're having trouble finding success if you're real, because anybody who buys gas, groceries, feels it today, and they are doing nothing to stop it. And they actually are promising to cause more inflation. So the fact that, you know, the aftermath of all this is because of what we've caused, what we allowed, and what we're doing now, nothing to stop the problems that are, you know, it hurts people on the lower income spectrum than anybody else, inflation. So this is a disaster from foreign policy to domestic policy, and that's why November is going to be a great, great coming for people who actually are working for a living.
So this, CJ, is there going to be a question mark at the end of this?
I was going to say, did he get it all off his chest?
I don't know.
Not quite, but what about the open border?
And the question is,
what is this government actually doing to stop inflation?
Well,
we're not creating more energy. We're stopping it. We're putting more pressure on farmers for fertilizer and crops. We're doing nothing. And this is a sad, sad situation.
So what can be done, CJ? What did the Republicans say can be done?
I thought he would have been better off doing nothing instead of going to war with our energy policy on day one with executive orders, because he can't govern. He won't. He won't even listen to his own advisors.
That sounds like Donald Trump. He never listened to his own advisors.
Well, wait a minute, CJ. Well, do you know what the volume of oil production in the United States is this year as compared to 2019, which was the record year, which was a year that was driven by the boom, and then oil production fell off because of the pandemic. But do you know what the oil production is this year?
What was gas prices?
The gas price has to do with world oil production. The only thing the United States can affect is U.S. oil production. Do you know what the U.S. oil production is this year?
We were exporting. And, okay, Sandy, you're...
I guess the answer is you don't. The oil production this year is...
Did he sign an executive order going attacking energy in America on day one? Did he sign an executive order?
The point is the oil production level was impacted by the pandemic, by 2022 the oil production level has risen to the same level that it was in 2019, and so the capacity is there. The problem is that the oil in the world has changed, and the price of oil in the world has gone up, so that oil and natural gas is being exported from the United States into higher price markets. That's the circumstance. It's not a question of oil production.
So he never signed an executive order, Sandy.
I didn't say he didn't sign an executive order, but the executive order wouldn't have had any effect now, because it takes much longer than that to bring wells online. The executive order had to do with the with new oil well exploration and development.
Why would oil companies spend money?
Right now oil companies are not even exploring where they can, because their view is that the cost of exploration, the risk benefit analysis of that, is not sufficient, because they're concerned about
this administration.
No, it's not about this administration. If you read the Wall Street Journal, CJ?
Wait a minute, CJ. I know you haven't.
CJ, you've been listening to the oil executives? Is that what you want us to believe?
Dang right I have.
Okay.
Sure I have.
And what have they been saying?
I think the oil executives actually are the very vehicle of the information which is reported that, you know, while they might like to explore in other places, they are not currently digging wells or otherwise investing the substantial amount of cash that they've built up during these last 3 years, because they don't think there's the risk-benefit analysis doesn't bear out the notion that they should invest that money in future production. It's because they don't believe that the price of oil will be sustained at its current levels, and they don't think that the price of oil that they project for the long term supports the production of new wells. I don't think we should debate for at great length about how the oil industry works, CJ. I'm just telling you that there are multiple ways of looking at the current circumstance, and much of it has to do with business realities.
Hey, thank you very much.
Much of it has to do with this administration, too. that on day one sign an executive order to shut down ANWR and Keystone. So the plan that they want to spend a bunch of money when this administration will fight them all the way to lower costs is proven every day you go to the pump and the grocery store. So they are doing nothing to solve the issue.
All right, period. CJ.
Buck 86 when he left office.
CJ, that was the result. If you looked at analysis, the Buck 86 was clearly the result of the recession and pandemic. And the Buck 86 was not a sustainable and not
That's
a predicted sustainable price.
I know.
And you understand what the economic condition of the United States was on that day, don't you?
Well, I tell you what, before Putin invaded, it had already gone up $1.80. So blaming it on Putin is a bunch of
people want to believe it. But before that invasion, there was the recession ended, and we were involved in the expansion and the revival of our economy. Thank you, CJ.
All right. Thank
you, gentlemen.
Yeah. All right. He got it off his chest, Andy.
Yeah.
Or did he? We've got to go to a break. Hang on the phone lines. We'll come right back on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, it's Friday. Fridays with Sandy Williams. And, you know, people say to me, I really like your radio show. They say, I especially like the times you have that guy on. And I'm like, who?
That guy.
That guy. I said, who you mean, Sandy Williams? Yeah, that guy. And I said, it was only one guy who said that, by the way, Sandy.
Oh.
Everybody else knows who you are. But anyway, let's go to the phone lines. And who do we have on the line?
Up first, we have Bob from Wisconsin's East Coast.
Well, help me out. Sandy, East Coast. You know that. Wisconsin's
well,
East Coast.
Well, that could be, I don't know what, Whitefish Bay? I don't know.
All right, let's find out. Hey, Bob, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. What's Wisconsin's East Coast?
That's the part. It's right next to Lake Michigan.
There you go. It's,
yeah, okay.
It's Milwaukee, I guess.
All right.
Good morning, Earl. Morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
I'm calling with an announcement this morning.
Go ahead.
I've ordered solar panels for my self-producing roof.
Whoa.
You ordered solar panels for your roof.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a gorgeous self-producing roof in the duplex I own and live in. It's 2.5-story, and no shadows over it. And it should take me about 6 months to get it in.
So, are you concerned about the energy crises in this nation, or is it that you have just decided that this is the best way to go?
Well, it's the best way to go. Number two, I'm concerned about my carbon footprint.
Really? Why now? Why now? That's an interesting.
Because at some point, we have to make the move. If we don't make the move now, we're just postponing it and probably avoiding doing it.
So let me ask you: President Biden is talking about that, and part of right now we have to suffer a little bit. And as we move towards energy independence and so the price of gas right now, we're going to have to deal with this at some point in time. You say what?
Any move to increase the use of petroleum for transportation is a short-term fix. long term, we need to move away from that, and we need to improve our use of mass transit, and so we need to make that more attractive, and make driving a gas-fired car less attractive.
You know, you don't sound like a millennial to me. You sound like you've been around a little while. And so, you know, that's Sandy, what do you want to say to Bob?
Well, you know, the whole solar thing is obviously, in the long term, we'll look back at Central Station coal-fired electricity and think it's the horse and buggies. You know, we'll be amazed that that's the way electricity was generated. We'll scratch our heads that gasoline was put into vehicles and people went around spewing exhaust out. So you're right, we have to move from it, and it is part of evolution and people making decisions like you're making.
Hey Bob, anything else?
I think we need to make the mass transit much more attractive. The failure of the Walker Clayfish administration to put the train in from Chicago to Minneapolis, and to think that they could take that $770 million and use it for tax cuts, that it looms heavily over us. That would have been the beginning of us moving to a
Bob,
thank you very much for the call.
It was $770 million that Wisconsin would have gotten, which we simply turned our back on. It didn't result in tax cuts for anybody. It just resulted in detriment to Wisconsin.
And because Detroit and California and Cleveland and everybody else took the money.
Yeah, Florida. I forget where else it went, but it went to.
But thank you very much for the call, Bob. Thank you for listening. No, it took a lot of courage to call. Really appreciate it. Who do we have up next, Sam?
Tom from L.A.
Hey, Tom. What's going on, man?
First off, we the people are the government, ultimately. Second, I am a proud FDR Democrat. And third, the Republican Party is the party of pro-death. I hope everyone keeps repeating that because it's factually true. Second, I want to also say that good for you, Bob. I've actually solarized my house 10 years ago. Best thing I ever did. I pay about a $50 bill each month or every other month for my electricity. I'm very, very happy with it. I also am going to be getting an electric car later this year. And people that complain about the gas prices, they don't seem to have a problem getting their $5 or $10 latte every day at Starbucks. So you might want to think about maybe.
Hey, but hey, Tom, there are probably a lot of people who are worried about $5 gas who aren't buying lattes, but that might be a California vantage point.
I feel called out personally, but.
Well, and generally the whole point is that if they are price gouging, then that is where we the people government should step in. If it's not price gouging and it's just a transfer of switching over to solar and other types of alternatives, the fossil fuels are dead. And the people that are running these major oil corporations are basically almost dead too because they're fossils themselves. You know, the way of the future is all the different alternatives that are out there. And the other thing is, I'm just guessing, I could be wrong on this, but I'm guessing that CJ is someone that really votes against his best interest. It doesn't sound like someone that's making, you know, $1 billion a year or $1 million a year.
I think it's safe to say that.
I think he really needs to look at things on his own economic status. And see where it is and which party it is actually that benefits him. And last, Earl, I'd really ask this as a very, very serious point, along with the Republicans being the pro-death party. I'd really ask that everyone in media stop calling what the Democrats are trying to do, including the Democrats, gun control. It's not gun control. It's gun safety. messaging matters. We need to ban assault rifles. We need to ban automatic rifles. But the messaging of this is gun safety.
So, Tom, let me.
Nobody wants to be controlled.
Tom, let me ask you something about banning those weapons.
Well, wait. Let me just jump in, though, because I do think you're right that messaging is very important, and I think that we fall into the trap of repeating words that have innuendo and have implications that almost settle the argument. So you're right. I think it might be kind of profound.
We're lazy.
No, it might be a profound realization. Calling it gun control. Control is a pejorative term to most people. You're right. People don't want to be controlled. And so if you're going to control guns, what does that mean? So, I think you make a really good point. I think that we need to figure out a new message. But I think we usually use
the Republican talking points.
Yeah, well,
because we're too lazy. The media usually gets the Republican talking points and uses them.
Well, that could well be. Yeah. And I think, however, the problem is that the genie's out of the bottle on guns in the United States with 400 million guns. And I did Google and try to confirm, but I believe there's 20 million assault rifles, they believe.
Yes.
Out in the hands of civilians. And so.
But if we got weapons of war off the street or not available for people to sell them, maybe it would cut down on at least the culture of what it is that we're trying to do. And I think you'd agree with me on that, Sandy.
I agree with you that we're not going to deal with this problem until we actually look ourselves in the eye and realize that we've got to do something not just about new gun sales and new gun transfers, but we've got to do something about the existing guns out on the street, because 20 million assault rifles on the street and 400 million guns available to be circulated means that we've got a forever problem until we deal with all those existing guns.
So, Tom,
100%.
Thank you for the call, Tom. Let me say this, Sandy, because here's a part of the whole gun debate that is not being talked about. The continued slaughter in central cities across this nation, the sheer numbers, more so than in theaters of war, the numbers of people being killed one by ones, two by twos, not assault. Mm-hmm. The fact that in the city of Milwaukee right now we're almost at 90. This is not even the middle of the year after we broke a record last year, the year before, by handguns even. So it's, I don't want people to think that it's solely that we have to do this solely because of the the mass killings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the sheer numbers of people who've lost their lives, you know, just by a guy not liking some other guy.
Yeah.
And we see that, man, it's, you know, it's, we've grown accustomed to it and comfortable with it, and it doesn't make the news. And so people are being, and communities are being destroyed, and American citizens are being gunned down with impunity in central cities all over this nation.
Well, I mean, the fact is that if people use general, you know, they think about guns in generalities, and they think about them as being used in the commission of crimes,
right.
Okay? And they think about them as being used in defense. But actually, most of these gun killings are used in periods of emotion.
Yes.
And they're an extension of a fist. You know, you could have had a fist fight, but no. You had a gun. You had a shooting
because you had access to these weapons.
Because you have guns.
Yes. Yes. Listen, we've got to go to a break. I want to delve a little deeper with you, Sandy, after we come back from the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789 in Texas. That same number. My guest is Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, everybody's expecting to see some major change at the Senate level. with guns. And, well, you know, why, there's not going to be any major.
I thought the definition of craziness was doing the same thing over and over, or expecting the same thing over and over again and not having it happen, right?
Yes.
And that's exactly what's going to happen this time, which is nothing.
Yeah. I mean, they may tweak something, but they're not going to be able.
They might make it illegal to buy an assault rifle if you're younger than 21.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know that's...
What a profound breakthrough that'll be. We already have 20 million of these assault rifles out in the hands of civilians.
Or they're going to ban large capacity, you know...
Magazines.
Magazines. But they're not going to... People who have large capacity magazines aren't going to say, oh, they just banned them. Let me take mine in.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
They're going to... They may stop them from producing them. But they're already out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Until we step back from this crazy gun societal view that guns are sacred, we're never going to get there from here. We have 400 million guns on the streets. We have 20 million assault rifles already on the streets. The genie is out of the bottle. They can pass bills about what happens in the future with respect to guns, which, incidentally, they've never shown a backbone to do.
Right.
But you know, the view in America is that guns are sacred, that guns don't kill people, people kill people. That's the defense that's always raised. And then you look at the statistics in America, and apparently, if guns aren't killing people, they're only the tool for killing people that they would otherwise use. America's got a huge mental health problem that is not existing in the rest of the world, because the rest of the world has nothing like the homicide rate that we have with respect to weapons, the use of weapons and guns. And the real answer is that in the United States, we probably have no more crazy people per capita right. than the rest of the world does, but we've got a lot more guns.
So I was talking to, Michael Letts on yesterday from South Carolina, a former police officer and a pastor. And we talked about the guns don't kill people, people kill people. And I said, yeah, but you left something out. He says, what? I said, people with guns kill people. You can look at Canada and let's stop acting like this has to happen, that it's a part of the DNA of human beings.
Right.
You can look up at Canada and you don't see this.
Because they don't have the guns like
I know.
Yeah.
It's not that they're better people or different people than we are.
Right.
It's because you can't just walk around with the access to guns there.
Well, just look at every circumstance where it happens. A husband is angry with his wife, loses his head. You know, he might inflict damage, but if he's got a gun, he kills her.
Right.
Or vice versa. Or this poor fellow who was worried about his terrible pain and the doctor who he thinks failed him. He could have barged into the doctor's office and had a shouting fit, had to be restrained because he physically wanted to attack the doctor. All of that could have happened. But no, that's not what happened. He had weapons. He went in and shot everyone that was in his way and killed the doctor.
Yeah, he had just bought. He just bought the AK-47.
Right.
You know, I had this in his mind. Hey, I got pain in my back. The doctor did it.
In Japan, they've had several circumstances of people going crazy and wanting to kill many other people with knives, and they never get beyond number one. You know, I mean, it just doesn't happen that you can accomplish the same kind of terrible impulse killings that you... Guns are the vehicle of impulse killings, okay?
Yeah.
And a gun, it doesn't... You know, if you have an impulse, the trigger can be pulled in that impulse.
You know, Sandy, the truth of the matter is you're never going to fix the gun problem in this country. Never. It's too far gone. Like you said, there's over 400 million guns out here already, and the manufacturers continue to produce them at record levels, and as quick as they produce them, people are snapping them up.
And guns don't break that fast. I had a great grandfather. I had a great grandfather who had these 1847 Colt revolvers. Right? They're antiques. They're beautiful things. I have them, and they could still work.
Yeah, I'm sure they. I'm sure. Well, muskets still work if you.
Yeah.
You know, if you get them and they've been taken care of.
So I mean, guns. So 400 million guns aren't going to break and
right.
and wear out. And if they wear out, God help us, because they've worn out because of use.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's a horrible thing. And until we change our culture and our tolerance for guns in general, we're not going to solve this by political grandstanding where people talk about how we, oh, well, we did something about this. We passed a law that made sure that you had to be 21 to buy an assault rifle, which begs the question of why in the world should American civilians be walking around with assault rifles? And when someone now presses people, there are people who are willing to give a frank answer about it, which maybe is the way we'll do it.
Worrying about the government.
Yeah.
But
they want to use those rifles on the military
yes.
from the government who will come to get them when they break the law.
Sandy, that's what's at the root of it. And that's why individuals can have 10,000 rounds of ammunition. My guest that I had on yesterday, he basically said that. You know, that you know, the government, you know, we have a right to, and he quoted the
Second Amendment,
and which is what they all quote. And I said to him, you guys really need to think this through.
Well, you know, we crossed that line and fought that battle in the Civil War. There were standing militias of the various states in all the southern states, and the southern seceding states used their standing militias to try to fight the war of secession from the United States. And it was viewed as sedition by the United States. We sent the Union Army down to tell them and to fight with them to force them to essentially to vanquish their individual state standing militias. And after that, we don't have standing militias anymore. We have something that's called the National Guard. And the National Guard is under the regulation and rule of the federal government.
So I said to my guest yesterday, if you guys think for 1 minute with your AK-47s or whatever it is you have, maybe you forgot about Waco. If you think the government is going to allow you guys, they know what you have. It's not like, and they know where you are. It's not like they've sold you these weapons. But if you think the government's going to let you, you know.
Well, it's like this group, and it might be the truth. I sort of had this epiphany as I was driving out here. I think the right, who is talking like this, pictures the future as being one in which there is an insurgent guerrilla war carried out by people with civilians with AR-47s who are fighting an insurgent war against a government that is, I don't know what, trying to regulate the environment in a way that they don't find appealing. And it's a horrifying future. If that's what they think America is headed toward or what they have to arm themselves against, then we're already living in dystopia.
This is
dystopia.
Sandy, that is what they believe, many of them. And I said to him, if you guys think that the United States won't use helicopter gunships on you,
right,
they're not going to allow you to take over this government.
Well, but you should talk like that enough, and civilians will be able to buy helicopter gunships.
Yeah. Right. We got to go. Hey, they can buy 50 caliber submachine guns already.
Yeah.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Yeah.